This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Sometimes our pre-show meetings tend to go a few minutes longer as we try to go some over the analytics of our downloads and where people listen. It's fascinating because we were just looking at that St. Louis, Missouri is the second largest city that listens to us outside of Detroit, which is Cardinal fans like us or something. But
if by chance somebody from St. Louis happens to be watching us and they want to leave a comment and tell us what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So welcome.
I've never been to St. Louis. I'd like to.
I've never been either. I know that some people say the Arch is overrated, but they do have St. Louis pizza style and then St. Louis ribs.
Also, they have some of the best Italian food in the country.
Really?
No, the pizza. I've never tried it, but I don't need to. It's like saltine crackers with like flavorless cream cheese on the top.
I'm out.
Yeah.
Yeah. No way. I guess that's a thing. So welcome into Tigers Radio episode 409. I'm Rogelio Castillo, along with Tim is Chris Brown and Youper. And you can find us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartMedia, Media, Stitcher, and Google Play. And of course, you can find us at MotorCityBengals.com. It's embedded in every article. And I want to give you a few reasons why you should be a Patreon member. So one, by the way, thank you for a new subscriber, Walt. Really appreciate that. His comments were really kind, and honestly, that really meant a lot to us. So thank you, Walt. If you're listening, Walter, thank you so much. And big WP. The reason why you want to be a Patreon member is bonus content like the video we had with Chris and I talking to JJ Cooper of Baseball America, which was a fantastic interview. We will be posting the audio in the next couple of days, but if you want to get the video, which will not be on our YouTube channel, I highly recommend being a Patreon. It just goes to, we want to go to spring training this year, Chris and I. Chris has never been to Lakeland. I want to have him go. And if a Youper wants to go too, hell, we'll make a trio. We'll do the three amigos. We'll do that thing. All jokes aside, all that money goes back into the show supporting. We have stuff to pay for, bills, electronics, and all that stuff. If you want to support us, go to patreon.com/Tigers Radio. And yeah, that podcast today, Chris, with JJ it was awesome.
JJ Cooper was really generous with his time and very fun. I think we got on his good side early by Rogelio played the Airwolf theme. we know that JJ is way into aviation and stuff like that. Yeah, we spent, I think, the first 10, 15 minutes not really discussing anything modern with baseball, just chatting and chopping it up. And that was cool. He was, nice. Like I said, he was really generous with his time. And we got into everything. We talked about Tigers rebuild. We talked about the Rule 5 intricacies. Deep nerdy in Rule 5 stuff that only he could possibly know, and it was nice. I shouldn't say pleasantly surprised, but it was just like whenever somebody, he's the editor in chief of Baseball America, you figure he's really busy, but he gave us an hour plus, so that was great.
Yeah, and it was funny too because he kept saying stuff like, I'll give a couple of hints or a couple of teases about the, I'm sorry to bring up the JD Martinez trade or some of those, some of the stuff like that. But even in terms of the farm evaluation, just we asked him a question about the infield and some of the answers he gave were pretty well in line with Chris. And I know Youper for a fact were thinking too, but it was very eye opening in a sense of just getting more of a painting a picture of the rest of the league, what they think of the Tigers and what have you. And then just reminding JJ, and he was well aware of it, the lack of infield prospects that have been developed as regular players. And so the answer he had for that question was a good one too. And it was something that, again, I can't wait for everybody to share that audio, but if you are a Patreon member, you can watch out the video now. But so speaking of baseball and all things of that, the GM meetings are going on right now in Carlsbad, California.
Carlsbad.
And there's, of course, you get in the series of MLB.com reporters reporting the Tigers are interested in, which is nice. It's really cool to hear. So they're interested in John Gray, E-Rod, Steve Matz, and
Deke Spilotini, I believe.
Yeah, that's the other one. So I'll ask you guys, I did an article on John Gray, and I know we're good. I'm doing one on E-Rod that will be dropping tomorrow morning. But I'll start with you, Youper. Of those four, the Tigers are supposedly showing interest in.
When we talk about signings like this, and you're looking at four guys and you're trying to maybe pick one or two that you'd hope they zero in on, I like to look at the what's possible, what's the highest ceiling possible. And I know going forward, I mean, their careers could all go in multiple ways. So I just look back a little bit about what they've done in the past. And it looks like, to me, Rodriguez, in terms of his strikeout numbers, but also if you just war, his B-war, he had a 6.1 in 2019. That's far and away the best season any of those guys have posted. If he's healthy and they feel good about his arm, I know he was a little bit down this year, but I think in terms of the highest ceiling, to me, it's Rodriguez. And then in terms of B-war, it was a draw between Gray and DeSclafani. They had a 4-1 and a 4-0 respectively, so pretty much the same. And then Matz, he'd be the lowest one for me in terms of strikeouts and what he's done and what his career season looked like so far. He'd be number four.
How about you, Chris?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty much in agreement there. I think Eduardo Rodriguez is the one that, I don't know, it felt like a couple months ago, nobody was really mentioning him as one of the more interesting pitchers on the market. And it was because he had a rough year by ERA. But I think he had the biggest discrepancy in all of baseball between his ERA and his FIP, his fielding independent pitching. It's, let's see, 4.74 ERA, a 3.32 FIP.
Wow.
And Fangraphs has their roster resource thing that allows you to look at all the free agents, and you could filter by position and so forth. And according to them, they project using their Zips, Dan Szymborski's Zips projection system, projecting WAR for the next few years. And Eduardo Rodriguez has the third highest of any starting pitcher available this year, according to that. Basically, Zips projects Max Scherzer to have 4.2 WAR next year and Carlos Rodon to have 3.8, and that's Eduardo Rodriguez at 3.7, ahead of Robbie Ray and Kevin Gausman and Justin Verlander. So that's one projection system. It doesn't mean anything is absolutely going to happen, but he's a guy who has a lot of talent, and as you've said, he's got a 6 WAR season under his belt. It's a different WAR system, and we'll talk more about that later. Yeah, so he would be my top choice. And then after that, I like Matz, but I worry about – I think he's had some injury troubles throughout his career. I don't know if it's been as pronounced as, say, Carlos Rodon, and he hasn't had the control issues of Robbie Ray, but he also, I think, has a much lower ceiling. He seems like the ceiling of a number four starter to me. And I feel like it probably same with DeSclafani. I do feel like there's more in the tank with Gray and more in the tank with Rodriguez above him. So those would be my top two. And just in general, I think it's interesting and fun that the Tigers are being linked with these guys. They're not, I don't think we've heard them linked with, despite writing articles about it, with Scherzer and Robbie Ray and stuff. We're doing that because we're just trying to cover all our bases.
Due diligence, of course.
Yeah, we're trying. They're not linked to these guys who are going to be getting $25, $30 million, but it's a far cry from the Jose Urañas, the Julio Teherans, Mike Fiers. Who else were they getting in the years past? Matt Mike Moore.
Pelfrey.
Yeah, even I'm thinking more like Pelfrey will do. But yeah, last 3 years, just hoping against hope that one of these guys has like a turnaround season. These are legit like mid-rotation back-end starters that they're looking at, guys who are going to be making somewhere between $10 to $20 million a year, depending on who they target. So it's nice to hear them connected with them. But again, I mentioned my conspiracy theory in our private chat. A lot of times it seems like it's John Paul Morosi who's the one mentioning the Tigers are linked to these guys. And he has connections here. But I always wonder, and this is one thing, one of these days I'd love to have one of these newsbreakers on, the Passan or Robert Murray from FanSided, and talk to them about, because there's got to be a quid pro quo there. There's not. They're getting their information from agents and from teams. So there's always another side to it. Like, why do you want us to have this information? You're not doing this for me because we're buddies. So it's getting long-winded, but it's nice to hear the Tigers in these conversations.
Yeah, John Gray has one of the best nicknames of all time.
You sending the wolf?
John Gray's the wolf?
Better, motherfucker.
Uh-oh.
They had to cut it there. His nickname is the Gray Wolf.
The Gray Wolf. Like,
yeah, that's a sweet nickname. But all jokes aside, I did see that his projected WAR is similar to Alex Cobb of the Angels. So I like John Gray because look at his splits; they're dead even. He pitched well in Coors, which is very hard to do, and he pitched about the same on the road. He's got his strikeout numbers are good, and he has a really good couple of good pitches, good off-speed pitches, slider. I think it was this curve or changeup. I can't remember off the top of my head right now. That looked really good, and he is a guy who can give you 150, 160 innings which is a norm today. If we're being honest about it, there's no more 200 and 220 inning guys anymore. It's not going to be the regular case going forward. But when you're talking about John Morosi for a second, this guy used to work for the Free Press, and he's well-connected. He graduated from the University of Michigan. He's from the area. And so it's one of those things where he's putting it out there, just doing his due diligence. But I think at the same time, it was funny. Jed UK made a comment. It must be really easy to be an MLB.com writer. You just say a team's interested in something, rinse and repeat. And I thought that was interesting because for us, we have to take our shots in the dark. We have to make educated predictions. We're not going to make some sort of half-ass statements, what have you. And good evening, Christopher. How you doing? And I'm not going to do that. And for Motor City Bengals, and this is something that is co-editor and you and I are both on the same page about. We're not going to half-ass something and make some, they're going to sign Justin Verlander. They're going to sign Max Scherzer. They're going to bring back Robbie Ray. Huzzah! The 2014 rotation is back.
It would be funny. That might even be a fun article to say. What if the Tigers signed nothing but former Tigers this offseason? How much better would they be? You got Jose Iglesias, you got Avi Garcia, you got Nick Castellanos, you got JD Martinez isn't available, but you could get Verlander, Scherzer, Ray. Yeah, so it would be funny. But I just want to step back for a second. We talked about MLB.com writers. There was that one great article about John Gray by Mike Petriello, who is fantastic, does the podcast. It used to be the StatCast podcast. I forgot what it's called now. And he was pointing out one of the big things. So you assume that ERAs are going to be better on the road than at home for course pitchers. But with John Gray, that's not necessarily the case. It's actually the same. But one thing he did point out was the third time through the order penalty in Colorado is astronomically higher than anywhere else. And it's always been considered a penalty for all pitchers. Once hitters see you three times, they get a better, just about everybody, they're slugging against, their batting average, it all goes up. But in Colorado, and they're thinking this is because just the higher altitude, you just fatigue quicker. And so you're less crisp and you're more likely to get bombed. So that could be a situation where, as you said, Raj, that he might not give you 200 innings, but he might throw close to 180 if he's out of course. He might be able to handle those sixth and seventh innings more often. Yeah, I don't know. It's something interesting. And it's weird, but I think that he's a hot commodity right now because he didn't get a qualifying offer, which is bizarre for any number of reasons. But if you can go sign a quality mid-rotation starter and not lose a draft pick for it, well, that's pretty great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And let me clarify this. MLB.com writers work hard and they do their jobs and do due diligence. But the reason why I thought that was funny is because on social, but then again, it's like they have to put content out there and they have to do that. And it's the same thing when not all our articles are going to be winners, but we have a certain requirement to do, but I respect the hustle and the especially with the article on John Gray, that was good stuff. And it gave us some more intel, but I did not know about the third time through the order. It makes a lot of sense. I can't imagine back 10, 15 years ago. If you imagine them before they humidated,
The humidor.
Yeah. The humidor. Yeah.
Yeah. It must've been the mid aughts. I don't know for sure. Maybe late aughts.
Yeah, I think late. I was going to say 2010, but it might have been a little before that.
Okay, because that was when we saw a difference in the pitching, too, because the Rockies were starting to develop their own pitchers for once. I remember the whole ordeal. Was it 5 years, $110 million to Mike Hampton? That was a terrible contract.
And what do they say? I think they said that John Gray is just the third Rockies pitcher ever to be drafted by the Rockies and then make it all the way to free agency as a Rocky. Following Aaron Cook and Jeff Francis,
that's right. Yeah,
a couple of immortals there.
Well, anybody who can survive there for 6+ years that's running a gauntlet, basically.
Yeah,
it's almost like you deserve some sort of badge, like MLB badge. Congratulations, you survived Colorado. What do I get? Do I get a raise?
Please let me retire their number.
Yeah.
So it looks like they installed the humidor in 2002.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So the other interesting tidbit of news, too, was the Tigers reported about being linked to Carlos Correa. And then, of course, the Yankees are, too. The Yankees want a premier shortstop, worried about the luxury tax situation. So, again, again, I want to believe that the Tigers are going to get a big name shortstop. I know people were reading into what Jamer Candelario said, that Avila is setting us up. I can't wait for 2022 kind of thing. He could just say that to be a good team org thing. Say, I don't really look into that more than what it is. It's cool. Candelario, by the way, congratulations to him. He was the Tiger Player of the Year voted by the Baseball Writers Association. We voted him 2 year. I know that's a little different, but whatever. It's still recognizing greatness. But either way, Nick Castellanos tied in Miami. It makes sense. That's his hometown. And the Marlins need an outfielder really bad to shore it up a little bit. And they're interested in trading their three pitchers, Alcantara, and I forgot the other two off the top of my head right now.
Pablo Lopez,
yeah. And then who was the third one?
Alcantara, Lopez, and...
Lopez.
Yeah, why are we blanking on that?
We have the internet in front of us, gentlemen.
It's not Rogers because he's young. It's not Sixto Sanchez, I don't think.
It's not Cabrera, that's for sure.
No, it was Cabrera, wasn't it?
The prospect they were Cabrera?
Yeah, I thought that's what he mentioned.
Really? He would probably be... they would ask for a lot for him. He had some good numbers throughout when he got called up, too. And he's under team control for 6 years, so they're going to probably ask for a penny for that. Is that right?
I thought it was him, but maybe I'm confusing him with somebody else. But, I thought it was kind of...
I didn't think it was. I don't know.
Because I thought there was some suggestion... Maybe not from them, but there's industry thought that maybe he ends up as more of a reliever. Let's see.
Okay. I do like, and the other pitcher I do is Erod because he's left-handed. And what Yupra was mentioning earlier, the other thing I forgot to mention too is that he's under 30. He's 28.
Yeah.
And so that serves, and there's something, this philosophy I've talked about numerous times. If you're under 30 and you're a MLB pitcher and you don't have any arm issues, you're going to get paid. It's just that simple. You could be 29, but if you're under 30, if you're on that 30, and that's also going to play a part in the show a little later, you're going to get paid. And I know the Red Sox offered him a multi-year deal, but nothing as of yet. It's all super quiet right now. And this is the part of the offseason to get annoyed with, because you want to see something other than a team's interested. You want to see a signing. And the one signing that has occurred, I was disappointed with, but I wanted the Tigers to go after Andrew Henley because of his strikeout numbers, and he signed a 1-year deal with the Dodgers, and there goes the Dodgers again going, you know what? No. And then the Tigers, speaking of Dodgers, by the way, the Tigers are reportedly interested in Corey Knebel. And you know what? I mentioned him as a reliever.
Another former Tiger. There you go.
And I mentioned him in my article as relievers, and everybody was like, no, they don't need relievers. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. Argue with me all you want. You can argue with me till the cows come home. Tell me a bullpen that is going to be that stays together the same arms year in and year out. Tell me. Go ahead. Because
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Exactly. It's not an offensive line like an NFL where they stay together, or a core of NBA players. A bullpen is different, and anything can happen. Anything can go wrong. But either way, I thought that was interesting to see that happening too.
But I think Knebel would be a nice arm to add to the mix. What team couldn't use a Corey Knebel? I mean, who couldn't? I mean, the guy's got a live arm. He gets the job done in late innings. If they make a move to add him, that would be, I think, very much positive.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's one of those things. It depends on what you're paying him always. If you're giving him like a 3-year closer deal, maybe not at this point. But then again, the Tigers have Gregory Soto. They like him. I'm not sure if they're convinced he's a championship caliber stopper at the back of the bullpen. And Michael Fulmer's only signed for one more year. Mm-hmm. So if they look at right now as a good time to add a quality back end bullpen piece, then that's fine. Like, they're just trying to get better at this point. It doesn't really matter. There's room to get better just about everywhere on this team.
And the other thing that's interesting that came out during the GM meetings was Scott Boras's comments. As I wanted to address that real quick before we get to the other strange part of the GM meetings that was discussed by Rob Manfield, who I don't know if he was just caffeine high or whatever the idea was for that came about that. We'll get that in a second. But so one of the things that Scott Boras said during the meeting, he said that he backed the demands with the Player Association. So they're going to still try to get what they need to get. the also it would be actually I didn't even forget about this part. It's gonna be the ninth lockout of MLB in the first since 95 technically, but it says the sport is a victim of quote unquote competitive cancer caused by teams to unload veterans for draft picks that led to the Braves to win. And the reason why the Braves won the World Series is because they were direct result of tanking.
Yeah, the Braves did. They did tank. It was, and they went hardcore. They were trading everything that wasn't tied down. I don't know if that's, you can't directly correlate that to them winning. The Reds tanked awfully hard and made one playoff series before rebuilding again. It's, you got to do it. It's, I don't know. That's one of the things we talked about with JJ Cooper, comparing the Tigers to the Braves in their rebuild.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. And then here's the thing he said about Nick Castellanos. Quote, I advised you all like 2 years ago, St. Nick was going to bring lots of presents. And frankly, we're just going to sit back and see what teams have been naughty and nice. End quote.
Wow.
Already.
You know what?
Matrix stuff.
Cornballs get there.
Did you watch the show Silicon Valley by any chance?
I watched the first season, yeah.
Do you remember the head of Hooli, the company, the fake Google company? His name is Gavin Belson.
Yeah.
And he was this pompous ass Silicon Valley, I guess, trying to be like a Steve Jobs or whatever. And he would always bring in these animals to give like a talk. Yeah. Consider the elephant. He does one. There's one with a bulldog. He says, consider the bulldog. Disgusting. And uses it as an example. And I swear to God, like I saw a picture of Scott Boras holding court the other day, and from the side profile, oh my God, it's Gavin Belson. He looked exactly like him to me. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? It makes sense. He's making all these weird extended metaphors and giving guys nicknames and stuff. It's always such a weird part of the off season, but he gets the job done, man. You can't argue with that.
Yeah. He is very captivating. And he also did you're talking about metaphors. Yeah. He did one on Chris Bryant. He compared Chris Bryant to Sean Connery, saying, oh, this version sucks. I don't know, I gotta find this. He has bomb-like abilities to create a great middle of the lineup. He's always red hot in the hunt for October. He's an extraordinary gentleman, and he is in a league of his own. So wait a minute. He mentioned two good movies, Bond, of course, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which was a bad movie, and the reason why Sean Connery quit doing movies. That was his last movie. I believe that was his last movie, and then he was called it done. And it was just weirdly weird how he put it. Like who the heck does that? That was clever. Imagine him mentioning whose character, the guy who Sam, his second in command, who ends up dying, was the one to talk about he wanted to own a farm with rabbits. Sean Connery's second in command. Remember that Sam? You've seen The Hunt for Red October?
Oh, The Hunt for Red October. Yeah, Sam Neill.
Sam Neill. Yeah.
I thought you had gone off to talk about like Of Mice and Men. No, he should have mentioned Zardoz, the one where Sean Connery is in a red velour, he's like a G-string on. You know what? This is a good time for me to share my screen, cool. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Give everybody the visual out there for people watching this on YouTube and go, wait, what are you talking about? Sean Connery in a red G-string. What? Yeah, that is a movie that actually existed in the 70s.
Yikes.
Late 70s. And he has
it's not a G-string. I don't know what you call it, but...
I don't know. Bohr has worn something similar, I would say.
I need to. All right, here we go. All right, here we go.
Sacha Baron Cohen had another character that had a neon green looking thing that's very similar.
Oh, yeah, it was Borat, wasn't it? It wasn't Bruno, was it?
I think it was Bruno. I don't remember off the top of my head. He would say, here's a quote here. And, all right, Chris.
Here we go. Can you see it?
Hold on. Whoa, where is it? Wow.
This is a movie. Look at it. Big leather, like thigh-high leather boots, a little gun, and that. That was a movie.
So the people that are YouTube,
the little gun jokes just make themselves there. But.
Yeah, YouTube. Yeah, our YouTube people are listening to us on YouTube or watching YouTube, going, "What the hell just happened?"
We'll have to include a link or a picture.
Here's another one as another metaphor, and this is referring to Michael Conforlio, who the Tigers have expressed interest in, who I'm like, okay, I like that idea.
They have?
Yeah. There was an article or somebody expressed, somebody said it on Twitter. It was somebody reported on that because he was the one that the Tigers asked for in the JD Martinez trade. And instead they're like, here's Jose King and Sergio Alcantara and Lugo, which again, now that's another story for the podcast with JJ, but this quote is great. He has become the quote unquote King of Queens. And Boris said, but quote, in free agency now, he's like the ace of many GMs' hearts. Which Sandy Ellison responded with this. You're going to love this. Quote, those comments I would characterize as a blowhard in a house of cards. Savage. Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. It's always ridiculous. But it's crazy like a fox. Boris knows. He knows he's not being like a poet or like super clever here. He's saying things that get people talking about it. And we are.
Yeah.
And just to jump back a bunch, so with John Morosi was talking about the Marlins, it was Alcantara, Lopez, and Eliezer Hernandez was the other guy.
Okay.
So, sorry. But yeah, I mean, Hernandez had a solid 11 starts this year. He's only 26 years old. Apparently, the Blue Jays are looking for starters everywhere, so.
Well, you have to think that one of those three guys would tempt the Tigers in some fashion. I don't know if there's a deal to be made there between the two, how they match up.
Yeah, it just depends on what the Marlins are looking for. If they're just trying to get another young starter, I don't know. Would you trade Matt Manning for – you'd probably trade him for Alcantara, but
yeah,
I don't know. You're just trading 6 years for 3 years, basically.
So after every time I heard a Boris comment, this was going off in my head. It's the Riddler laugh from 1960. Oh, the Riddler. The original Riddler from 1966, because some of the quotes he was. What's up?
Who played that original Riddler?
The guy who played Rocky, Burgess Meredith.
He played the Penguin.
You're right.
If Frank Gleeson, or it starts with a G, I can't remember.
Yeah, you're right. You're close. Yeah, it's something like that. Ah, shoot.
Yeah.
Gorshin?
Yeah, he was the original Riddler. And then Vincent Price was the Egghead.
That's right.
Yeah, so somewhere Tom Mazur.
What a ridiculous everything he did. Like his sidekicks were like Benedict and
total non sequitur. But get back on it real quick. But the last one, that the reason why I say those kind of laugh is this one right here is the one that is the corniest one of them all on infielder Marcus Semien. Quote, he brings a charge into the batter's box and kind of insulates the middle field. So truly he's a modern day Semien conductor. And we all know there's a chips shortage there's a chip shortage of chips worldwide, end quote. That's corn. That's like a dad joke.
These all are. These are. Nobody talks about the King of Queens anymore. Come on. Nobody talked about it when it was on. I didn't watch the King of Queens. It was a CBS comedy. Come on now.
Yeah. Did you watch The King of Queens?
Very little. Maybe 10, 12 times.
For every corny CBS comedy, my wife likes them all. So there's...
Two Broke Girls.
She loved that show. That's a terrible show.
I never got into Two and a Half Men. I never got into Everybody Loves Raymond. Any of that stuff.
I watched some Raymond.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, it's about a sports writer.
Pretty cool. Close to that guy. All right, that was a non sequitur. But, Chris, I want you to bring up this next thing, what Rob Banfield said about Fangraphs today, because this is something that Slack channel. It was just like, what?
Yeah, I don't know if it was specifically Rob Manfred, but it was, we got news today from all the negotiations are ongoing, and the big sticking point of all of this seems to be service time, when guys become free agency, how players who haven't reached arbitration or free agency are compensated. And the story that came out today was that the owners proposed players be paid based on their Fangraphs war. These are players prior to free agency. And it was just a different way. Yeah, when you first hear it, you're like, what in the world? Like, why would they ever do this based on a public-facing website? We love war. I use it all the time. It's 16 times in every inside the numbers thing for me. But I always look at it as, okay, this is the best we can do with the information we have. Teams know about the player's value more. And this is just an estimate.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not outrageous. Then I read in it and I go, okay, I understand. They're just basically saying this would replace the current salary arbitration system where players, their value is determined, or the potential earnings value is determined in a completely, basically in a dark room somewhere. The people have tried to figure it out, but we know, okay, yeah, Jamer Candelario is probably going to make $4.5 million this year. But if you did it based on his WAR, he'd be making more than that. So there are some interesting aspects of it. But as they pointed out in the article, it would really hurt because it's Fangraphs is based on fielding independent pitching, which is the idea that what should happen, but it's not what did happen. That's what Baseball Reference WAR. That's why Casey Mize's Baseball Reference WAR this year is probably two higher than his Fangraphs WAR. I haven't checked, but he's probably 3.5 on Baseball Reference and 1.5 on Fangraphs because his FIP was like 4.6 or 4.7. His ERA was 3.6 or 3.7. So you'd have like weird circumstances like that where some guy is getting paid much less or much more based on one website, their calculation. And then relievers never rack up high WAR unless they have absolutely absurd numbers or they pitch a ton of innings, like long relievers. So, yeah, it was just a very silly proposal, at least not well thought out. And the same, and even beyond that, the core issue within the proposal was that players still don't become free agents until they hit 29.5, which was the same problem with the first one, which they proposed months and months ago. So I don't know. It was something I never, ever thought I would see that the team would even, we know that people read Fangraphs from baseball, but I would never thought they would be like, yeah, what about Fangraphs? Like just the amount of weird things that could happen with that. Like what if Fangraphs just goes in and goes, you know what? We like this player. We'll bump him up. He'll get more money. He'll kick it back to us. Like, our website isn't working. We're not making as much money as we need to. Here you go, Marcus Semien. You've got a 12 WAR season. Give me two of those WAR.
And they are asking for donations. Before you sign in, they have that goal they want to set and everything. And so it's pretty.
And I don't mean the people of Fangraphs are great. We've had some of them on our show before, and we love Fangraphs. I don't mean to suggest that they are corrupt or anything like that, but setting up a system like that just begs for something like that to happen down the road. I don't know. Again, like we don't really know the current system, how it works, how they determine the value. So maybe something like that is pretty going on. Oh, there you go.
Well, yeah, and they must
put the word in there.
They must tweak their formula at least a little every year, some fashion. So who's going to control that?
I remember the old system. There were like type A free agents and type B free agents and things like that.
Yep.
And I think Eddie Bajak, I don't know how he's pronounced his name, but he's Tigers Twitter intelligentsia. He's been around for decades now. I think he's the one who cracked, he like reverse engineered it to figure out how they did it and was able to get 99% right beforehand to determine who was going to be an ABC.
And I'm not surprised either because Eddie, I think in real life,
he's an engineer.
Yeah, graduate. Yeah, yeah.
Gotta watch out for these engineers.
he's a smart dude. And the thing that I took away from that too, it was something that the age thing made me think about. If it's a bad combination because you're going to be able to lock these guys down for almost a decade worth, and for pitchers, imagine being a starting pitcher and you know that you're not going to be a free agent until you're technically 30.
Yeah,
and you might have 5 or 6 years left. I'm not saying every pitcher dies down at 35 or 34, 35, but I love to see the correlation of data between pitchers who are 35 and 40, or even 34 for that matter. Every year in your 30, it's like running backs. Once you hit 30, you're pretty much done.
Yeah.
I'm not saying pitchers are, but I'm not suggesting that, but you know.
You know, teams have these pitchers locked down until they're 30 years old. Where's their incentive to take care of them? I would seem to me that you want to push your pitchers as much as you can.
That's a good point.
You can use them up. And who cares what happens to them when they're 30?
Yeah, and if they were to set the free agency age at 29.5, what you would probably see then eventually is teams shifting towards taking more high school players and or more college players and just immediately sending them to the majors and dealing with it. So the quality of play would change a little bit, but then you'd still eventually have the same thing going on, but you'd have control of these guys for 8-9 years, like you said.
Yep.
And the players, there for their part, they want, they'd like situations where guys can hit arbitration after 2 seasons or become free agents after 5. And so there's got to be some sort of middle ground that they can find here. I don't know what it is or how they're going to figure it out based on the proposals that we've heard. They still seem far apart on all this.
So let me ask you something, Youper. In terms of, you've been around to see some of the original 81 lockout, which I was going to refer to. And I'm not saying that for any reason than you're the kind of elder statesman in this group. So
I'm old.
But it helps because it adds perspective. And they had that strange, you know, to the strike season, whatever, the split season, first half, second half championship. Yep. But is the labor union more or less not as strong as it used to be? Because I look at the strike of the 90s, seemed like they're very fortified. But in 81, there was a strange, that whole thing in 81 seemed really strange that they had the split of the season. And I think the owners were caught off guard.
I think what happened there is, you know, the last two strikes, including that one, I think the owners have learned now they're not going to let it go to a strike anymore because the players can pick when they're going. I think they're going to lock things out because now the owners have control of that, where they can say no more baseball. Whereas the players pick and choose their spots, and that's how you end up with no World Series and stuff like that. Yeah, I think the owners have gotten a little savvier dealing with the players. They're not totally outclassed like they were against Marvin Miller in the 70s. But I also think that the players union, most people think they got worked in the last negotiation, or at least semi-worked. And Tony Clark probably bears some of the brunt of that. So he's got to be thinking, I need to make up for that and stand tall on this negotiation. So that's why people seem to think they're going to get this done before any baseball is missed next year. I'm not confident of that. These things tend to drag on, and there's going to be a lot of small details that they want to fight over.
Yeah, one of the things, so I feel like in the 90s strike, they were playing without a CBA for quite a while. Yeah. Not like years, but several months. Like they were willing. And I do wonder if things get gross during these. I just wonder if there's a compromise that might be like, hey, let's just play one more year with everything the same as it is right now. And then we'll keep talking and negotiating. Because I do feel like both sides know that they can't really afford, after having a shortened season last year, they can't afford to have another season shortened by labor strife. So I wonder if there'll be some sort of random short contract compromise, or if such a thing is even allowable. I don't know. They may have to sign 3 or 5 year deals no matter what. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, I mean, cooler heads prevail is what you're hoping for. Yeah, hard to say. It really is. But I think the owners definitely know they have to lock out. They can't be subject to the whims of a strike.
Yeah, and I think a lockout is going to happen. I think that is inevitable. The question is how much. That's just a procedural thing, basically. This question is how much people freak out about it when it does happen. People are like, oh, yeah, I knew this was coming, instead of saying, all right, the next step is continued negotiation. The season doesn't start for another 3 months or whatever. It should be fine. But, yeah, I don't know. People like to point out the worst possible outcome.
Yeah, it's basically the sky is falling. The sky is falling, yep, scenario. And it's funny because I look at, as much as if you pay attention to Tigers for the last 30 years or so, it's strange to see Tony Clark in this role, because you see him now as this kind of big burly dude with an awesome beard. And then you remember him as, this is Tony Clark for Bristol, back in rookie league, in the Appalachian League. So look at that. That's,
wow.
Yeah. That's a young Tony Clark, fresh out of University of Arizona. That's just, I don't know. Just like sometimes you go, man, we're old. Cause I remember this. I remember when the Tigers drafted him and it was a big deal, and seeing Tony Clark now and then, as a predominant figure now, it's
you know, I would love to be able to find the article. I read it a long time ago and I don't remember the particulars, but I know the essence of the article is, across most of the major sports, players' unions have been at their weakest when they've been led by an ex-player And they've been at their strongest when they've been led by labor lawyers. When you think about it, it makes some sense. The people who are they're not as subject to the whims of all the players because they weren't one. They're looking to represent the whole unit of players and get the best possible deal and be tough as nails against the owners. And sometimes I just don't know if players have that in them because they spent so much of their adulthood playing.
Yeah.
And these labor professionals are the opposite. They've been through these wars. And that's been when these unions have been viewed as the strongest.
Yeah, no, and I remember certain players being very strong pro union, like Tom Glavine. I remember being a real kind of hard ass for the players. And there's always good, smart players who like in any other, you're an auto worker, there's going to be a handful of people who are like legit, like way into this, understand the law and fighting for workers' rights and stuff like that. I do wonder if there's a little bit, if you've ever read up, there's an unconscious favorable bias toward tall people in the world. Tall people make more money and get better careers and stuff like that. You got Tony Clark is 6'8". Oh, I guess he's going to be a good union chief. He's so big.
They got a lot of bad deals in the eyes of many, and they started doing better once they got a player out of that position and put a labor chief in there.
I'm sure the owners don't miss this man right here. Donald Fear.
Donald Fear.
Yeah, yeah. Look at him. He's like, I'm gonna bust you. I'm gonna bust you good and proper.
He always looked like he smelled bad milk.
Yeah, he did. Like, he had an intimidating face, and I remember him and Glavine were at these. In when that strike happened, it was they trust in Fear, and that's he got it done. And so it wasn't pretty, but you're right, Uper. There is something to what you said. They're absolutely right, and just finally they're. Marvin Miller is going to the Hall of Fame, isn't he, now?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep, he did. He got actually voted in by the – I don't remember how he got in, but
– I think it was a committee, but one of the things he said was, I don't want to go in the Hall of Fame, and if it happens, I'd rather it happen when I'm not alive. And
there you go. You know,
but so we did get a question tonight, Chris, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, our friend Deadly Ninja Bees comes through yet again. Yeah. I thought we might get more streaming questions, so I didn't put out another call for questions, but oh well. He said, question about the mid-level pitching targets like Matz and Gray, the ones we were talking about earlier. Do you guys see them signing early or waiting it out? And if the Tigers sign a couple of starters, what does this mean for Tyler Alexander? I thought he looked like a starter last year. A couple good questions there.
That's a really good question. Uper, I'll let you take a first crack at this one.
Well, for Tyler Alexander, he had some really nice outings. I'm sure he will play a role next year. Like most teams, you start with your five starters, but you're going to need 6, 7, 8 when get through the year. And I'm sure he can be one of them. And so I don't think it affects him too much because what's he going to be? He's always going to be pretty much a 4, right? I don't see a real breakout into a 2 or 3 with him. I think he'll have his uses no matter who they sign. In terms of before the lockout, that's something I've been thinking about. It's really hard to really nail that down. I would think some players might want to say, hey, I want to go into this lockout with some security. I'm going to have a deal struck, and I know where I'm going to be once we start for the next 3 or 4 years, and I know what money is coming in. And for the Tigers, they're not up near the luxury tax. They're not even close. So they can sign players, and they know no matter what changes after the lockout, the contract's probably not going to hurt where they're standing at all. So I would hope there's some action this month. It'll be pretty dull if there's not. But some of the bigger players I can see wanting to wait until after the lockout, like Correa and so on.
Yeah, they're seeing how the agreement. As far as Alexander is concerned, I did an article about him when the season ended. I thought he was one of the most unheralded Tiger players we've seen in a long time because his numbers as a starter were better than he was as a reliever. And when he made that transition, I think it was in mid-May to late early June, as a starter, it picked it up. They were able to hone in on his best pitches too, which was his cutter, I think it was. But I just know that Alexander was much more effective the third time through the lineup, second time through the lineup, third time was hit and miss. But still, if it wasn't for Tyler Alexander, I think the Tigers would have been in a far worse situation because they didn't have, again, and this is something that I saw somebody make a comment today on Facebook about the Tigers have starters in their system. No, not really. They don't have anybody in AAA or AA right now outside. I can't think of anybody right now. You don't know the state of Alex Fedo, whether he's going to be in the bullpen or start. You don't even know who he is right now. We haven't even heard him rumor about him pitching or anything. Franklin Perez is pretty much back down to some sort of squander or what have you. So the Tigers don't have a lot of depth. And Alexander stepped in, got the job done, and I really enjoyed it because I've been, Chris, since you know me, I was the one that was like, remember, I think when we first started doing podcasts, I'm like, Alexander, that guy was going to be a great starter. And when he flopped, I'm like, But then when he started doing that thing when he turned around his, in delivery where he did a little quarter spin back, and that wasn't used to be part of his delivery. He became a much more effective pitcher in Toledo, and he got up in the Tigers organization. I was looking through this earlier when we talked to JJ. Tyler wasn't on any of these lists here, and so he was a second-round draft pick, which worked for the Tigers, which was better than what happened with Nick Quintana. Actually, the way he explained the Nick Quintana trade is also brilliant. But either way, I personally think that if the Tigers get one starter and maybe a reliever or mid-tier starter, maybe like Alex Cobb, for example, is out there too. Alex, I think Kyle Alexander has a role in it. Although I don't really think Cobb has been healthy too. But yeah, either way.
Yeah, to the idea, I think we will see some pitchers sign before the lockout and before coming back. I'm inclined to think it'll be the guys who don't have qualifying offers. I feel like someone like Eduardo Rodriguez might wait longer. I don't know why I think that. For some reason, maybe teams are hoping like somehow the new CBA will give them some sort of relief. I don't think that even matters. I assume that if you have a qualifying offer under this CBA, then the terms still apply. But I do feel like the bigger contracts are going to wait until after. So I can see Gray signing relatively soon, and Matz and DeSclafani and Alex Wood and all those guys, the second, third tier. But I feel like a Stroman and Gosman and Erod and Scherzer might sign quick too, because he just needs a bunch of money and probably can stay in LA. With Tyler Alexander, I think if you're the Tigers right now, you're going into next year with two starters, basically. You got Casey Mize and Tarik Skubal. That's why they're connected to all these starters, because they're going to get at least one, if not two, I think. And then it's a competition between Tyler Alexander and Matt Manning for the fifth starter spot. And it's hard to argue that Tyler Alexander was worse than Matt Manning last year. Tyler Alexander was much better than Matt Manning last year. And for as much as, you know, you need to bring Matt Manning along, if the Tigers are serious about competing, they can't have Matt Manning starting every fifth day if he's going to pitch the way he did last year. That's not a way to win. What did he have, a 6.5 ERA or something like that? When he showed signs, Tyler Alexander was pitching about the same as Casey Mize. So, I mean, you go into spring training, say you sign two free agents, you have Mize and Skubal and those two free agents. It's a competition for the fifth starter spot between Alexander and Manning. They'd love Manning to win that and Alexander be their swingman, longman, and they could bring him back in the rotation. But if that were to happen this year, I would have given Alexander the edge. So I think there's still a role for him for sure.
Yeah. And Walter brings up Justin Verlander, which I forgot to mention, that somebody talked about the Tigers giving him 2 years at $50 million. And I don't know who that was. And I was like, wait a minute, that sounds like a ridiculous amount of money for a guy coming off Tommy John at his age. And look, this workout was impressive. I'm not going to pretend to go. I wrote an article about it. I thought it was great. Throwing out there, throwing the heat. But then you factor again, and maybe this is I'm trying to be cynical here, but reality, he didn't face any live batters. He pitched 25 pitches, and that was it. But to come out there throwing 95, 96 is impressive. So does Verlander, what's up, Chris?
Didn't they think that he's going to have another one here relatively soon? Okay. I thought he was going to do another showcase soon. They thought he would do it before a certain, I think it's before the qualifying offer has to be accepted, which must be in the next few days.
18.
So they thought he might have another one before then.
But yeah.
I feel like any team who signs him is going to have, there's got to be some like incentive laden escalators in there. If you're going to pay him $25 million, I feel like you can't, or maybe you can, but I would think that last $5 million, last $10 million don't come unless he makes like 25, 30 starts for you or something like that. And how much can you expect him to throw after a year off and not on surgery? I don't know. And maybe he's good enough that he's been able to, somebody will just throw the money at him, hoping that to get the really good year too. But I don't know. He's good. We'll see.
To answer Walter's question on YouTube, will Fado pitch again in the majors this year? Look, I here's the thing. I think that Fado will be in AAA, and unless he blowing the batters away, or he has a good, maybe he has a really good spring. Maybe they use him out of the bullpen. I don't know. But if he's going out there throwing darts and just lighting batters up in spring training, and he's one of the among last cuts, you could see a midseason. I could definitely see that. Whether he starts or not, that is a question. Because if I think, Chris, you've said this before, that you think he's better suited out of the bullpen, or I forgot who said that among us. I think maybe Brandon Day said that too.
Yeah. Been Yoop as well. Yeah, no, yeah. He strikes me as a, I've always compared him to Alex Wilson, former Tigers reliever Alex Wilson, who got by with a low 90s fastball and a really good slider for a long time, or cutter. And I feel Fiado's best pitch is his slider. It was. It remains to be seen. I think there's a certainly it's a possibility we could see him pitching out of the bullpen in Detroit this year. We could see him make a dozen starts for the Tigers this year if things turn out great. It's tough to know. It's a comparable situation to Joey Wentz last year. Joey Wentz went back to double A this season. It was, he was okay. He was mostly limited to 3, 4, or 5 innings in any of his outings. They wouldn't let him throw, I think, past 80 pitches or so. And he wasn't nearly as crisp as he was before. And that's just very often the case with guys coming back from Tommy John surgery. The command just isn't quite there.
Yeah, the off-speed stuff takes a minute to get back too.
Yeah, and when you're talking about, it's always funny thinking about like major league command. If you sit back and try to throw a ball 60 feet, 6 inches, if you miss by 2-3 inches, that's like life and death in the major leagues. Like, you have to be really precise. So unless you have absurd electric stuff, which is the way the league's going. Like, screw command, just throw 100 with a nasty breaking ball. But someone like Fiedo can't do that. He's going to probably top out 93, 94. That's what he was doing before. So yeah.
It seems like he's just shy in the velocity department of trying to pull off a Lance McCullers career, where he's throwing nothing but that slider, but he can mix in a 96.
Yeah, ball. Good call.
And Fiedo just doesn't quite have that much electricity.
Yeah,
to get that. So I don't know if you can you be a slider guy and throw 93. Maybe if you're pinpoint with it, maybe.
Yeah, and I was going to say, if he has to be one of those pitchers that has to be pinpoint accuracy in order to be effective as a starter, it reminds me of Russ Ortiz, the former Braves and Diamondbacks pitcher, where he didn't have the velocity, but he had a book on all these guys, and he was all about control and pinpoint control. When he started losing pinpoint control, that's when he was just a crappy pitcher. Or not, I don't have to say crappy, I'm sorry. That's when he started losing his effectiveness, because he didn't have the velocity to go back there. That was his, it was always low velocity. Jar Jurgens comes to mind too, the former Tiger Brave. Same thing. Like when he lost his velocity, he wasn't the same pitcher. He didn't have that much velocity to begin with.
Yeah.
But he had to be pinpoint control. And those, like, he might fall in that category. But for me, I think that if it's, I think better might, this is my opinion, I think he might be better suited out of the bullpen. But it depends on what the Tigers do here in the offseason. I did the free agent minor league look over, and I think there's a couple starters out there that could just fit. Like, Chris, your suggestion of was it Nick Castellani?
Ryan Castellani.
Yeah, Ryan Castellani in relation to Chris
Castellani. Are they not related? I don't know. They might be. I have no idea.
If Chris wants to tell us, he would. But yeah, I think that he was a good idea, because his windup, and I saw on Pitching Ninja, looked exactly like Max Scherzer's. So if you want the Max Scherzer thing without having Max Scherzer paying the money, hey, you can give that. And Walter asked about what do we expect out of Wentz next season.
I think he's the real wild card. That could be one of our fun stories next year. Now that he is in year two back from Tommy John surgery. And he looked not great, but not bad. He could really take a step forward. That would be really fun to see. That's something we don't talk about near enough.
Yeah, from watching him this year, it seemed interesting because his changeup was his best pitch. And whenever you got a lefty with a good changeup, you've got a chance. I think of Nick Ramirez. He didn't have a long career, but he was a viable pitcher for the Tigers because he had a really good changeup that he could throw at any time. And Wentz has a lot to like. He's a big-bodied kid. He can get the ball up to 94, 95 occasionally. He doesn't sit there. And he'll show two different breaking balls. I think he's definitely got a chance to make some starts next year. But it does. He has to be better than he was this year. And I assume he will be, just from clearing that hurdle of the first year back from Tommy John. But yeah, he was not a guy who was he just seemed to struggle to really put guys away easily this year. His numbers were okay, but it just wasn't that efficient, effective pitch execution that you'd like to see.
And I will say this. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. You'll go ahead. If you're still talking about Wentz, that's cool.
Yeah, I was going to say Wentz, Chris, I think we've seen this before. We saw this Michael Fulmer. Second year back. The first year, Fulmer came after Tommy John. He was struggling. The velocity wasn't there. He had some good outings, and he talked about that. At first, we all thought that was, well, maybe it's just, but he knew exactly the process of what he was going through because he was still coming back from surgery. I think Wentz next year in 2022, the velocity will be back up. I think you'll see a better version of him. And I think you'll see him starting in either Erie or Toledo at first, but I think the Tigers might bring him up at some point because they, and like when I read that study, and I put this in articles, it's true. A lot of the guys coming back the second year are much more effective. So now that he has a year under his belt where he knows what he's capable of, can he throw his same off-speed pitch like he did before? Can he snap one off, or can he get the velocity back on his fastball like he did before? He knows now with surgery what he can do and what he can't do.
Yeah, and I think it's – we're not – none of us are professional athletes, but I think it's something that everyone can relate to. If they have – even if you've never had an injury where you require surgery or something like that, just the idea that something that you're using that had to be completely reconstructed.
Yeah.
And you just – there's got to be a mental point where you stop worrying about it anymore. And that's what it seemed like happened with Michael Fulmer. It seemed like it happened in spring training where he was – he still seemed like the guy he was last year. And he was trying to hold back and trying to baby it. And eventually he just said, screw it and let go. And that's when he got everything back. And he was up in the upper 90s again. It was like, yeah, there's got to be a mental block there. And maybe that's a case for everybody coming back from surgery. And Wentz included. And Fido maybe too. I was just going to go back. I kind of remember Al Albuquerque. As the first few years of Albuquerque were like just this ridiculous roller coaster because he would strike out. I think he had super high strikeout rates, but also walking like every other batter he faced. And then his velocity, you just remember him from his slider was ridiculous, but he also could throw like 97, 98 every now and then. He was sitting in like the mid 90s. And then the velocity dropped down and he actually did gain some better control for a bit. Mm-hmm. When the velocity fell too far, all the strikeouts went away. And then that was it for him. Like you were saying with McCullers, I do think that you can be like a primary breaking ball pitcher if you have that ridiculous fastball in your back pocket too. Even K-Rod, when he came, he was a changeup pitcher, and that worked when he still had a decent fastball, but as soon as the fastball dropped a little bit farther, it was all over for him.
Yep.
There is it's one of those things I was thinking about too with in terms of starters. There's no discussion about Willie Peralta. I thought that they – Did you notice that there was like Peralta became a minor league free agent a free agent, and you would think, I know the Tigers like him and want to bring him back. You think that there'd be some sort of, hey, we're going to bring him back because teams have re-signed players or somebody they quickly lost, but nothing.
Yeah. I don't know how much of this is procedural. I don't know if is he pitching in the Dominican Winter League or anything like that. I don't know if he's out doing other stuff. Yeah, it's tough to say. I'm sure they do like him, but maybe they don't want him on a big league deal again. Maybe they're going to try to get him in a minor league deal again.
He seems like a guy. Let's say they're on the hunt for two free agents, big name free agents, and they only get one. So now we got Willie in our back pocket. Let's get him in here.
That could work.
Yeah, it feels to be. Blunt, a pitcher like Willie Peralta is not their priority right now. They want to get some guys who are legit, like they can trust to be mid-rotation starters. And Willie Peralta is one of those guys who would not have made much money on F4. He's a guy whose FIP is almost two runs higher than his ERA because he's a low strikeout, kind of elevated walk, pitch-to-contact guy. And he seemed to do it really well this year, but there's a lot of indicators suggesting that maybe that's not sustainable.
Not to mention with the Tigers defense being one of the worst in the league, that doesn't help your cause. And
yeah, you don't necessarily want a bunch of ground ball pitchers out there when you've got Willie Castro and Harold Castro, man in the middle.
I forgot to mention this too. Drew Carlton, who is pitching down in the Dominican Winter League, was taken off the 40-man roster and was released or waived. It was waived, yeah.
I believe he's waived. I think he's agreed to go back to Toledo.
Yep. He did. Yeah. He did. He accepted minor league assignment back to Toledo. So Drew Carlton will be in Toledo's rotation or in the bullpen next year. No, sorry, the bullpen. But either way, I think that those are starting some of those little moves that we're talking about. Those things are starting to happen. We're definitely going to see a flurry of activity next week because you have to have everything set up for the Rule 5 draft. Again, there will be some clarification on the Rule 5 draft. Chris had asked a good question, JJ Cooper, and they'll get some clarity on that as we try to figure that out. There's some players that should be eligible. They're not, and like I said, they're on the extra audio this week, or when I put it out this weekend, they'll be able to find out. So if you are a Patreon member, by the way, Walter, you know what? I mentioned that earlier. Walter asked in the YouTube, is the Henley signing by the Dodgers just them having a ton of money, or is that the going rate for starting pitchers these days? Both. To answer your question, Walter, both. Because they're just like, you know what? Bam. And the Dodgers, when they sign somebody, it's like the Rays. They have a strong indication of know what they're doing. And I think it's a starting rate thing, too. But it's the same as they try to get to the punch real quick on that. But if you are a Patreon member, like I said, and Walter is one. Thank you, Walter. I mentioned that part of the first part of the show. So if you want, let's go back. And the JJ Cooper audio is there. It's a video portion of it. So as you were saying, let's go ahead.
Well, there's one thing I was going to look at something here and I was going to try to share my screen, but I need to refine my search here because there's something very fascinating about Andrew Heaney or Haney, however you want to pronounce it. Sheriff Haney. I don't remember that. He is in the last 3 years. He's among the leaders in all of baseball in strikeouts and walks, like strikeout per walk ratio. He's got an elevated strikeout ratio and a really nice low walk rate. And I'm trying to refine my search here to show. Yeah. Okay. Here we go. So let me elevate and share my screen. Elevate and celebrate this. I will see if this, like when I share my screen, if you'll be able to follow my cursor and stuff like that.
Yeah. We should be able to.
This is something that is,
producing on the fly.
Yeah, sorry. All right. Can you see my screen now? You see what I'm looking at?
Yeah, let me add it to the stream. Let's see here.
Whoa. All right. How about now? You see what I'm looking at?
Yeah.
It's the FanGraphs.
Yes.
List. So this is the list from 2019 to 2021. These are all starting pitchers ranked by strikeout minus walk ratio, basically strikeout to walk ratio percentage. And here's Andrew Haney, 21. Over the last three seasons, these are all pitchers, all starters with 250 plus innings. If you look, everybody above him, Jacob DeGrom, Garrett Cole, Max Scherzer, all these guys, they're like Cy Young Award finalist type pitchers. And the guys near him, you've got Sean Manaea, Zach Wheeler, Matthew Boyd, Chris Paddock. Like these are all good pitchers. He's in that mix. And you can look over here at this ERA minus. I don't know if people can see it. ERA minus is like OPS plus. So Jacob DeGrom's ERA minus of 51 means that his ERA is 49% lower than the average over this time. Every one of these pitchers with the strikeout to walk ratio better than Haney's is a well above average ERA guy. And then you get to Andrew Haney, and it's 117. Ooh. And it doesn't make any sense to me. Like he's very much, I don't know who made the comparison, but he's very much like Matthew Boyd. I think it was Evan Woodbury.
Yeah.
And they both of their issues, they even have the exact same whip over the same last couple of years, and their BABIPs are pretty close. They probably have similar home run issues, 179 home runs per nine, 175.
Yep.
So anyway, I'll stop sharing now. But that's basically the idea is there are things there about Andrew Haney that are very positive, and the Dodgers apparently think that they can accentuate those and then eliminate the home run issues. What we were hoping Matthew Boyd could do, and he did this year briefly before going on the IL. So that is, I wouldn't necessarily say that's the going rate for random starters this year. I think that's the going rate for starters with a significant amount of upside. And I think that's what Haney has, or Haney. Again, I don't know how he pronounces his name. He's been around forever. I've been following prospects since he was a prospect. I should know, but I don't.
Oh, I saw a name in there, Sean Manaea, who is on the trade block. And the A's are basically sell. So it'll be interesting to see who picks them apart, whether it be Toronto, New York, or even the Tigers for that matter. But I think the Tigers don't have enough prospect depth for what Oakland may want because But we'll see what happens. If Oakland's like, hey, we'll take Parker Meadows.
You never know with Oakland. I always picture them dealing with the Yankees for whatever reason. And I don't know if that's just because they've done a couple deals with the Yankees and it just sticks in my head. But they are one of those franchises that just refuses to spend money. And anytime the payroll gets high, they look for any way to get it down. And that could be, hey, we'll give you this guy if you take on this. And taking on this could be Matt Olson. Like, oh, I'll take on Matt Olson.
Yeah.
Here, you have Gage Workman and Dylan Dingler, and we'll see you later. But
yeah, there was somebody that said something about the idea, because we posted an article. Alan, God bless Alan, he's done a really good job so far. He's been hitting the bricks pretty good, and mentioned a possibility of hitting the bricks. That's bad. He's been doing well. Sorry, I should on the audio version. I'll edit that.
No,
weird things. Anyway, he mentioned backup first baseman because potentially with Cabrera, Scope, what have you. And there was a comment like, what about I told him to make sure you put some disclaimer, not until Spencer Torkelson's ready. And then somebody made a comparison to him being the next Norm Cash, a generational player. And I feel like that's a lot of pressure on a guy who he went three levels in 1 year. His first season pro ball. That is awesome. No,
he hit 30 home runs.
Yeah.
Walk rate, WRC plus was great. He made a ton of progress. It's always funny. You could tell how old somebody is by the player they compare him to. Norm Cash. Norm Cash, you came over in what, 1960, 1959?
Yeah.
61. No, that's fine. If you believe it's, not to hijack the thread, but yeah.
By the way, Oakland has been doing this since they were in Philadelphia under Connie Mack. They've always done this. When they were in Kansas City, for example, how do you think the Yankees got Roger Maris? They would pick up, and Don Larson was a former Kansas City A.
Oh, lots of guys. Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of them. And they were joking around in the 60s that the Kansas City A's were the Yankees farm system.
Yep.
So this goes back a long time. Oh, go ahead, Uber.
I mean, the A's definitely have some guys who would inject some juice into the Tigers lineup. You mentioned Manaea for the rotation, but you got to believe Chapman Olson, one of those guys, could plug nicely into the top half of the Tigers lineup.
You figure out a way to get Matt Chapman, you go, all right, Jamer, you can play second.
Yeah.
Or first. Or DH, or what? We'll put you in left field. We don't care. Jamer, you're great. Let's figure it out. Because Matt Chapman, you got one of the best defenders in all of baseball there. Yeah, it's. I think there are probably better fits than for the Tigers, but it does feel like there are about six or seven players in the A's right now who will not be on the A's to begin next year.
Yeah, even if they wanted to. He's under the suspension now, but would they move that?
Laureano, interesting center fielder.
Well, I'd watch him play.
No doubt. So, Nick Plummer. Yeah, Nick Plummer, who was released by the Cardinals, former Brother Rice graduate. And I love to see him in a Tiger uniform or Toledo uniform as a backup. Whatever the case is, the Tigers should pounce on that because, Mateus is pretty good. I can't argue that. But so thanks so much for listening to Tigers Radio Pod. We're going to have one more show next week as we're going to take Thanksgiving off, the week of Thanksgiving, because quite frankly, unless the Tigers do something that week, which watch what will happen. Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, as we're getting ready to go to bed, or if you're like, let's say you're 25 years old and you go meet up with your friends to go relive your high school glory days, because that's what you do the night before Thanksgiving. You meet up with your high school friends and you party. Watch what
happens. The idea of Vila and Dombrowski meeting up and making a big drunken trade, and suddenly the Tigers have Alec Bohm and
shots of wild turkey.
Mick Abel. I did see that the Phillies are linked to Starling Marte, which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that would be a good signing. A good signing for Philly. And they have some, I think there's some rotation issues, or even, I know they might be looking for a shortstop too, but
they've got many issues, yes.
Yeah, they do got many issues, including the eternal stuff they have going on. But honestly, we'll have the JJ Cooper audio out here in the next couple of days, but I wanted to really give it out to our Patreon members. I know I haven't put it out exactly some bonus content, but we're going to start doing that here. We had the Ryan Kreider breakdown. We have Erie. We're going to start this week at some point. I've just been really slammed since I came back. from work and the day job. And then Motor City Bengals is doing very well. So I want to thank everybody who's been reading. A special shout out to Alan and Gavin and Danielle for stepping up and doing writing and filling the void. And hopefully Kellen will see him back on the scene soon and had a good conversation on what's going on with him. And so honestly, it's been a great month for us and we appreciate you listening, all the great comments. And again, go to MotorCityBengals.com, check out all the great content. Tiger Minor League Report at Tigers ML Report on Twitter, Tigers Minor League Report on Facebook, and you can find our individual things, handles on there. And until then, again, thanks for the questions. Killer B coming through. Appreciate it. And until next week, have a good week, everybody.
Good night.
Where's the money, LeBell?